When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today on the show, one final dive into mock drafts, as we are now just 2 days away from the real thing that seems like it has been forever in coming. So today we're gonna get real mocky, mock drafty, mockapalooza, mock draft mania, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to share, as I've been promising for days now, some of your best mock drafts. I've been collecting them, and I'm going to give you grades on what I think of them, some more interesting, some more chalky, some very creative. I'll grade those for you. And then I will share my final mock draft before the real thing, at least until Friday, when we, of course, have to mock rounds two and beyond. But it's based in part today on a report that could indicate, or could not, which way the Seahawks may lean at 16 when they're on the clock. All sorts of mock drafting to get to today. So let's do it.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever Podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
A couple of updates today. As every year at this time, there are kind of last-minute tidbits that leak out, some of them legitimate, some of them have been proven historically to have been leaked from a strategic standpoint in order to affect a prospect's draft stock. The most interesting one, I think, that came out today that might impact the Seahawks, Albert Breer reporting that Troy Fautanu's knee has been flagged for medical reasons. There was no reports of any issues with his knee. He had a foot issue his freshman year, I believe, but has played every snap the last two seasons, participated in everything at the combine and his pro day. According to Breer, it may be the type of thing that has come up on his scans that isn't a short-term concern, but could be long-term. Remember, this came up last year in regards to Tyjae Spears, a running back who ultimately went to the Tennessee Titans, that there may be a congenital issue that would impact his knee long-term. But again, certainly there's nothing to indicate that Fautanu is or will be impacted by this early in his career, if at all. Found the timing of it interesting, but Breer's one of the best ones out there, very well connected, very well sourced, and doesn't seem to be one of those reporters, of which there are many, that are willing to present stories quid pro quo to do agents and players and sometimes front offices favors. He seems to operate more independently than that. So keep an eye on that. If he should fall, maybe it will cause him to be available there at 16, if not later, for the Seahawks. Probably the most popularly mocked player to the Hawks for obvious reasons. It matches need. It matches the connections with the UW. But also a guy that I have maintained is good enough that I really question whether he'll be there at 16. So something to keep an eye on. Another one, within the last 24 hours, it has come out, even though teams have wrapped up their 30 visits, had to be done with those by last Thursday. Some news still trickling out, and one that we hadn't heard up until this point. LSU defensive tackle Mason Smith did have a 30 visit with Seattle, traveled out here, met with the organization. Intriguing player, big, tall, long, had an outstanding freshman season, really burst onto the scene. Then he tore his ACL celebrating a teammate's touchdown. One of those fluke things, kind of struggled to get his explosiveness back, but finished strong last year. And he says that he's being told by teams that he meets with that they view him in that 25 to 40 range. So he could be a potential target of the Seahawks if they were to trade back. I don't see that being the pick at 16. But he could come into play a little bit later. Certainly would make sense with given his length and size and youth. and his explosive athletic ability. So Mason Smith on the Seahawks radar. And then a story in the Dallas Morning News today from Greg Riddle. It was a feature profile on Texas defensive tackle Byron Murphy, who has been a favorite of mine since the process began and has been another guy, maybe the second most commonly mocked player to the Seahawks, that he has been told that he is not getting past 16. That Byron Murphy has been told by his agent and other contacts throughout this process that he's not getting past 16, which could mean one of two things, right? It could mean that the Seahawks have indicated to him that they like him very much. Now, remember, they met with him at the combine, and then reportedly he was set to come to Seattle for a 30 visit, and then that meeting was canceled. Was that because they're trying to do a little misdirection? Or could it be that they had all the information that they needed on this player, didn't feel like the visit was necessary? Or could this report indicate that if Murphy's available at 16, there is a compelling trade that Seattle has indicated they would be likely to take if that happens? Curtis Allen, who's going to join me on the show tomorrow in response to this story. And in fact, I think this is how I saw it, as he retweeted it, indicated that maybe Philadelphia would make some sense coming up from, I think, there at 22. A number of other teams in a shallow defensive tackle class. We've talked about the value in the position groups in this class and where the leverage might come into play at 16 for the Seahawks if they should be on the clock. And their top target isn't there, that defensive tackle is one of them, because outside of, you know, you have Murphy and Newton and there are some other guys kind of on the fringe of the end of the first round, early second round, and then it drops off significantly. It is not a deep class for dynamic interior defensive linemen. So that could indicate that Seattle's holding the cards there. I'm going to take that piece of information, though, and incorporate it a little bit later as I do my final mock draft before the real thing gets underway. I'm going to get to the fan mock drafts here in a second. Before I do that, of course, hit that like button on the YouTube channel, subscribe to the channel, and hit the bell so you always get notifications of future episodes. On audio, I'm on all the platforms, so you can subscribe to Seahawks Forever wherever you get your audio podcast. But if you want to listen to ad-free episodes, you can do so for a low monthly fee and join the subscriber base on Spotify, and that link will be in the description. It's pretty simple to get signed up for that. Or if you just want to support me or the show, you can buy me a coffee, or you can hit that super thanks down below the screen if you're watching on YouTube. And all those links, as always, will be in the description. So let's get to this. I've been teasing this for a while, so we're just going to do it this way. I've just kept your mock drafts in a bookmark folder, and I'm going to go in reverse chronological order because it's going to end with probably the most creative of all the drafts at the very end. This is a regular contributor to my Twitter timeline and a guy that loves to do mock drafts almost as much as I do. By the way, that sound you hear in the background is Butch playing with a bottle cap. So he's having a good time back there in the background. You may see him pop up at some point. DK is a Wookiee is a regular contributor to mock drafting on my feed. Let's just open this one up for you. He did some trades. First of all, he moved down from 16 to 26 and ended up at the end of the day picking up 26, 57, and 92. And here's what he came up with. At 29, Cooper DeJean is still there. Now, is that unrealistic? We've seen some indication that he's a top 20 player, but I do think it's fair to speculate that he might last this long. Some teams might view him, they might have questions about exactly where he's going to fit. Sometimes versatility can work against you in some teams' eyes because they just don't know which hole you're going to fit into. And that there also could be a run on, well, there should be by 29 on an outstanding cornerback class. After the quarterbacks and the tackles go, the receivers start to go, those corners are going to start to go. And if teams don't view DeJean as a pure corner, view him more as a safety, well, that might drop his value a little bit. So he could be there at 29. And I think this would be a tremendous value. We have talked about the fit with Dejean for the last couple of weeks. We talked about it with Bryce and Ryan on the last show where we did the live mock draft. Took a lot of heat from fans that just think this would be an unnecessary pick, to which I would say, and this theme will come up a little bit more as I look at some of these drafts, that look at the player. You want good players. And especially with the new coaching staff, new regime, you want blue chip players, of which I think Seahawks roster is a little scarce right now. There's players we like. There's players we think have ceiling and upside that could ascend to blue chip status. Dejean would be one of those guys from the get-go, and I think would really fit into what Mike McDonald looks for as far as versatility in his defensive backfield. At 57, a really interesting smaller school prospect, Marshawn Neyland, edge player, explosive, high motor, really stood out at the Senior Bowl. Jeremiah Trotter's a guy that Ryan and Bryce and I took in our draft the other day. He's known as the most instinctive linebacker in this class, perhaps. So, of course, he's got the bloodlines with his dad, a guy who might be better in coverage than in the run game right now, but is a smart player, very smart player. And we've heard Mike McDonald talk about how that's a priority for him, especially in his linebackers, but really in any player that he's pursuing. Tavondre Sweat at 86. Interesting that he may have dropped into this range now with his recent DWI and some questions about partying earlier in his career, not taking care of his body, maybe drinking too much. He has admitted that he's had to be accountable for that and address those issues in interviews with teams. And so interesting to see that a guy that we all agree fits on this roster would really provide something that isn't present currently on it. But that was probably out of range before because he was clearly in that second round conversation, may have dropped now to where the Seahawks will have a shot at him. Zach Zinter, questions about how teams view him with the broken leg late last year. If he was 100% healthy, we're probably talking about him in the 40s, 50s as one of the best guards in the class. You can get him at 18. That's a steal. I think he's going to challenge, if he's healthy, he's going to challenge to start as a rookie. Jatavion Sanders, really athletic, longer tight end out of Texas. Layden Robinson, another guard from Texas A&M, looked good at the Senior Bowl. Heavy offensive line emphasis here from DK as a Wookiee. Matt, I believe it's pronounced Gonsalves out of Pittsburgh, a guy that visited Seattle and really like his tape, really plays hard, likes to bury guys in the ground. And then Isaac Guerrero, running back Louisville. Running back is a need. They only have three currently on the roster. Then you go Joe Milton, the third. Obvious upside with the arm there as a late developmental quarterback. Tip Ryman, big, tall, 6'7", 270-pound tight end. Better as a blocker than a receiver at this point, but there's some upside. And then Nathaniel Watson, one of the real few true Mike linebackers in this class, 6'2", 240, 245. Seahawks did visit with him as well. That'd be great, great value later on. And a nice pairing with Trotter. I think we did the same combination in our mock on Sunday with Bryce and Ryan as well, because I really could see that being the duo moving forward. So I really like that one. I'm going to give that, I think it's a little unrealistic that they pick this many bodies, but it's hard not to like just the full breadth of this draft. I'm going to give it an A-. I like it a lot. Here's one from Mike Mundell. He contributed too. We're just going to go with this first one here. This is a stick and pick draft. He said that was his goal in this one, is to see what it would look like with no trades. And at 16, Jared Verse. And if you told me that Verse was going to be there at 16 and that the Seahawks were going to stick and pick him, that is one of the few players in this draft that I've talked about wanting to do that for. And I think you go to bed Thursday night and you feel good about whatever's going to happen next. But then you wake up and they get Cedric Gray at 81. He's going to come up later in this show as well. Guy that Dane Brugler mocked to the Seahawks recently in his full seven rounder. Guy who's really athletic, says he's always around the ball, 100 plus tackles the last 3 years, and he's young and really looked the part at the Senior Bowl. And especially in coverage, which is an area where I think he could contribute and compete for snaps as a rookie. There's Zinter again. He's going to be a popular choice. Luke McCaffrey is a guy that I named as one of my guys on Sunday. love his inside-outside versatility, the fact that he's only played the position for 2 years, but he has a quarterback background that gives him an understanding of defenses and leverage and route trees, and the fact that he went to the combine and looked like he'd been playing receiver all his life. Plus, I think it would be a little bit of the ultimate troll move for the 49ers to take Christian's little brother, who beat him by a tenth or two of a second, or a hundredth or two in the 40 at the combine. AJ Barner, outstanding all-round tight end, and a guy that JJ McCarthy recently said of all the draft picks coming out of Michigan this year, they sent 18 guys to the combine, that Barner might be the one that's being slept on the most and underrated. Excellent two-way player with some more upside there. Dominique Hampton, a guy we've talked about a lot on the show, out of UW, led the team in tackles last year. Bigger safety, can play in the box, but also has shown some ability in coverage. Not sure he'll be available at 192 after the combine he had. And then Drake Nugent, really interesting late guy. You take two Michigan offensive linemen in this exercise. Another smaller center, but he has some guard experience too. And you watch the tape and he doesn't look small. Doesn't play small. Really, really quick feet. Quick to get to the second level, but has a physical edge to him as well, that if his former teammate at Michigan, Oluwatimi, doesn't stand out and win the starting job in Seattle, that he could challenge there. Okay, this one is from Weapon Next. Another no trades draft. He has a comment here. Two huge upgrades and potential blue chips with the first two picks. High upside flyers with the next two, underrated late rounders after that. So he goes Fautanu at 16. There's Sweat again at 81. That really could be the range for him. James Williams, another guy that a lot of Seahawk Twitter fans like, or Seahawk mock draft fans like, as a guy who is listed in some circles as a safety, bigger, longer safety, and some as a linebacker. Theo Johnson, who the Seahawks had in for a 30 visit, very tall, athletic, raw receiver out of Penn State. Trey Taylor would be the first safety, I think, ever drafted from Air Force. I was just listening to a draft podcast recently where they talked about his athletic ability. Logan Lee, who Shane Hallam talked about on the show last week when I had him on. And Jordan McGee, small school linebacker from Temple. Really athletic and has some upside. I like that one. I didn't grade Mike's, did I? Boy, this one's good. I'd like a little more volume. I'd like a trade down at some point. I want more than seven players, so I'll give this one a B+. And then this one, I'm not as high on Williams as others. And Logan Lee, I think, is a major project. I think he's going to take some time. I think there are some guys kind of in that range. That's about the range where Christian Boyd, McKinley Jackson go sometimes, two players the Seahawks have met with. I might like that a little better. I'll give this one a B-. I think there is some future upside, but not as much in the short term. Fautanu, Sweat, Williams. Oh, this is the one we just did. Okay. All right. Bucket. The Braotis on Twitter. The Braotis. There's a couple here, but one of the only ones that traded all the way out of the first round. So he goes all the way down to 35, but interestingly enough, worked his trades in such a way that he did some late round pick swaps as well, which you can see he used the Pro Football Network simulator here. And they offer those types of trades a lot, where you're packaging, you're moving down to get a pick in the second, third round range, but you're also moving up and using late picks to basically swap later picks for earlier picks. And so you see what he did here by moving down and then up in a couple of cases. And so rather than having the 16th and the 81st pick in the top 100, now the Seahawks have five of the top 81 and six of the top 102 picks. So interesting value here. And this, I've played with this scenario a lot too. I have mixed feelings about this scenario. It brings back a lot of Malik McDowell PTSD, some LJ Collier PTSD, where you trade down hoping to get a certain guy and some pick return value. You miss your guy, so you trade down again and you keep missing your guy, and then you end up not getting any of your first round grades. Remember last year, you know, we may never know exactly how many first round grades John Schneider has. It's probably somewhere between 15 and 20. But remember, they grade a little differently than other teams, and that Derek Hall, who they took in the early second round last year, had a first round grade on their board. And so if they have another player like that this year, that they think they have graded higher than other teams, maybe they do something like this, where they move all the way back thinking that they can get more value in this range where the meat of the draft, the thickness of this draft, before most agree that it falls off. I think I saw a report this morning that 81, was it a Jim Nagy report? I don't want to get the source wrong, but 81 players that this analyst had a draftable grade on coming into the draft season this year ended up staying in school. That's the impact that that NIL has had in the COVID years on this draft. And that should be, for the most part, finished this year. There'll be a couple of tricklers next year. But again, we're seeing some things from scouts this morning saying next year's draft is loaded. Well, we heard that last year, right? Every year, I think this NIL thing, unless they curtail it, somehow start to regulate it, I think some of these players are going to kick that can down the road a little bit. If they don't feel like they're getting the feedback that they want from the draft advisory committee enough to come out early, they'll stay in school if they can make some money doing it. But here he goes, Bo Nix at 35. Now, this is interesting. We know the Seahawks have met with Nix. We also know that the buzz right now is that he's falling, and that there are a lot of people in scouting circles, scouting analysts, draft analysts, are saying they expect him to fall out of the first round entirely. My only thing with Bo Nix, I like him as a player. I really do. But with the acquisition of Sam Howell, I don't think I like him better than Sam Howell. He's older than Sam Howell. He's bigger, but Sam has a better arm, and he has experience starting in the NFL, and I think can be a little bit more of a vertical threat. I don't like Bo Nix better than Sam Howell. And so I don't have the luxury of knowing who was still on the board at this point when he took Nix. But I would imagine there are some guys, especially in the offensive line, because you see that he didn't address that much here, that I really would have liked at 35, maybe a guy like Christian Haynes or a guy like Jordan Morgan, if he should fall out of the first round. And then Junior Colson, you know, if you can get into that range, that's a guy that everyone makes a connection, obviously a fit. Bryson Ryan and I took a lot of heat for taking Trotter with Colson still on the board the other day when we did our live mock. You just never know what Mike McDonald's looking for. And just the fact that Colson has played for him doesn't mean necessarily that he thinks he's going to be fit. I'm not saying he won't be. I'm not saying he's not. I'm saying I love the player. I love this fit. This would be a great pick at 55. We just don't know what the tendencies are going to be from this new regime. Cole Bishop, one of my guys, a guy at 66, so I love that. Braylon Trice is a guy that I don't know if he goes this high anymore. Everyone is really down on Trice. Was listening to the Draft Dudes the other day with Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs, and they're like, he's a day three guy now. Like the weight isn't what it was. He's not playing at 275 anymore. The athletic testing, even at a lower weight, even though he's battling some sickness, the combine wasn't great. Braylon Trice might be great value later on, but I think 71's a little rich for him based on everything that we're hearing right now. There's Sweat again at 81. And then Zinter, right? Popular. We're seeing some consensus here. Luke McCaffrey at 118. And then Isaac Rex, tight end in the seventh. I'll give this one a solid B. I think regardless of my comments about Nix versus Howell, you're taking a shot here, right? You're taking a shot on a guy that can be a franchise quarterback. And you are, I've talked about the idea when it comes to Michael Penix of layering this position, doubling down, basically hedging against next year's class not being as good a year from now when we look at it, that you're giving yourself two bites of the apple, two shots to find a franchise quarterback. Or if Sam Howell should establish himself, then maybe Bo Nix is a guy that could have some trade value later on down the road. Solid draft. Solid draft. Let's go here. Spencer Gray used the mock draft database simulator. Always like using different simulators because you get different big boards. And he's the only one that has Liotu Latu from UCLA at 16. Widely considered the best pass rusher in this draft, especially from a technical standpoint, outstanding hand usage. He's got a refined set of moves in his toolbox. He's quick, he's dynamic, but neck fusion surgery, spinal fusion surgery is no joke. And, you know, some teams may not have him on their board at all because of medicals. We don't know. I don't think there are any reported meetings between Latu and the Seahawks. I'm not sure if he fits. He takes some heat for not being as strong, setting an edge in the run game, that's not a big part of his game. Not sure he fits what Mike McDonald's looking for up front there. At least not enough to stick it and pick at 16 with those with the question marks. Peyton Wilson is another linebacker that, and you can see here, he moved up, moved back a little bit from 81, but he was able to move up. Let's see if it details the trade here. It does not. But he was able to get into the second round at 42 with Peyton Wilson, another guy with major red flags and injury issues, especially regarding his knee. He's a longer linebacker, really athletic, high motor, pursues plays all over the field. Again, not sure he's a fit for what Mike McDonald's looking for in his linebackers. And I've read a lot of things out there that tend to agree with that. Kalen Bullock, USC. Again, athletic, kind of has made his money as a deep third center field type safety, but has really struggled in run support and in tackling. Not sure that fits with what Mike McDonald likes to do. Cade Stover, one of the best two-way tight ends outside of Brock Bowers in this draft, former defensive lineman. You can see it in how he blocks, but also really smooth in the passing game. Outstanding tight end. I'd take him all day long at 102. Brendan Rice, another guy. I have said, and we'll talk about this when we get to my mock, man, some fans have come after me for taking wide receivers in this draft. They came after Bryce and Ryan and I as well when we took Jalen McMillan in our draft on Sunday, I think in the fourth round or third round. The Seahawks are going to take a receiver most likely in this draft, and they should every year because it's a strength coming out in college football now every season. You want to tap into that with what wide receivers are making on the open market now. You want to try to mitigate that, right, and keep a lot of younger guys in your room and bank on upside. And Tyler Lockett's on the wrong side of 30. DK has one of the biggest cap hits on the roster. Jake Bobo is limited in what he can do. There's question marks. It's always strange to me when people try to make the argument that we're set at any one position group because injuries happen, age happens. We don't know who's a fit in this offense and who isn't. You got to keep adding to that receiver room. You have to. And Brendan Rice, just really, really smooth operator. Really, really smooth operator. Roger Rosengarten, that'd be great value at 123. There's a lot of buzz for him going way, way, way earlier than this. In fact, there is some momentum and some whispers out there and some reports that the 49ers really like him. We've all seen the pictures of John Lynch watching up close his workout and that he might go end of the first round, that he might sneak into the first round, Roger Rosengarten. Jordan Travis is a pretty popular pick late in the draft, a developmental guy. You know how much I like Travis. You've heard me talk about him. I'm not sure as we get deeper into this process that he's a long-term starting quarterback. But I think he's a guy that I would love to see develop. He'd be fun in the preseason. I think he's a guy sort of maybe a Taylor Heinicke type, right? That'll be around the league for a long time, could come in, win you some games, like Easton Stick with the Chargers, how he came in and gave him a chance and ran around, made some plays with his feet. And in the passing game, when Herbert went down last year, I think Easton Stick is kind of a cool comp for Jordan Travis. So I'd love to see that on day three. Nehemiah Pritchett, cornerback Auburn, and then Braden McGregor, one of my favorite guys, one of my guys, at edge, Michigan. Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl was trying to make the case that he needs to go much higher than this a couple of days ago, that he thinks he's a third round value, just motor for days coming off the edge and really finished strong last year. Had 3.5 sacks in the last five games, was really a terror in that national championship game, kind of found himself there at the end of the season last year. Be a nice little find late on this one, but I'm going to give this one a C just because those top three picks, I'm not sure those are Mike McDonald type players. Seahawk nerd. This guy goes deep. He does his own rankings. He uses analytics and math, and he is aptly named. His Twitter handle is accurate. So he says he tried to operate under realistic scenarios. First, he trades with Philadelphia, moves down to 22 and picks up 53 in the process. But this is one of those trades where I talk about where you also offer something later to move up and get you into that range. But you don't pick it up an extra pick, right? You're not going to get 53 as much as fans want it. You're not going to get a second rounder just for moving down to 22. It just doesn't match up on the trade charts. But it does if the Seahawks were to give up 16 and 81 in order to move back to 22 and get up to 53 to get you into more of that meat of the draft. Then he trades again, and he trades down from 53. And this is a scenario that I like a lot. And even if the Seahawks stick and pick at 16, I like the idea of moving down from 81 to pick up some extra stuff in like the fourth and fifth round. And you can do that when you look at the draft board. You'll see that Green Bay, who has 11 picks this year, has a couple of picks within about a 10 pick range behind the Seahawks. There's an opportunity there. There's an opportunity with Houston. There's some matches there later in the draft to pick up some more value. Here he sends 53 to Buffalo to move down to 60, and he gets 128 and 163. And Buffalo moves up to get a receiver that they want in that range, Troy Franklin or Roman Wilson. And then he says Seattle targets high character players and goes heavy offensive line in round four. This I like. This is interesting. He goes Johnny Newton at pick 22. And it seems like this is about the range that Newton's been going lately. That for some reason, maybe it's because he just doesn't have the longest arms. He has slipped a little bit in the eyes of the mock draft world. Although Greg Bell in his full first round draft today in the Tacoma News Tribune had Newton going 11th. So you could see that, but just a man, dynamic, explosive, outside of Latu, probably the second best pass rusher in that first round group, even better than Dallas Turner. And he can do it from the inside or the outside. He would just be such a fun player to put in Mike McDonald's hands. I would love to see Johnny Newton. Javon Bullard from Georgia, a guy that, seems to be a second rounder, might not be there at 60, but just an outstanding instinctive player, makes plays on the ball all over the place, but he'll come up and hit you too. He's a real favorite of Corbin Smith's. So I like him there at 60. Hunter Norzad, really athletic, has played center and guard. Love the versatility there out of Penn State. A guy similar to his former teammate Juice Scruggs, who, you know, played in the Shrine game last year, wasn't considered one of those top four or five centers, but ended up being drafted as, I think, the third or fourth center off the board to Houston, played quite a bit as a rookie. Something about those Penn State interior offensive linemen. Another offensive lineman, Javion Cohen, that's not getting a lot of buzz. So he doubles down on interior offensive linemen, but this is a guy that, if you remember when Emory Hunt was on the show, in his draft guide, he has Cohen as his number one guard. He just thinks he's being knocked too much for his athletic testing not being great, but you look at the tape and he looks like a rookie starter. AJ Barner, a guy we've already talked about. That's probably about the range. That's probably about the highest range you'll see him go. Sometimes he's in the fifth or sixth. That's probably about the top end of his range at the end of the fourth round. Jordan McGee, again, the young linebacker out of Temple. And then, you know, he picked up some extra picks. So Cedric Johnson, defensive end, Ole Miss. Michael Barrett out of Michigan. This is a guy that I don't think is being talked about quite enough. Junior Colson gets all of the attention among Seahawk fans. But Griffin Sturgeon, who's been on the show a number of times, right? See Mike Spin Move on Twitter and the Seattle Overload podcast with Maddie Brown and Tydan Gonzalez. These guys love Barrett. Just doesn't pop as far as the athletic testing and all those measurables, but he does on the tape. And he just looks like a really solid player and a guy you can get in the fifth or sixth round that can play rookie snaps and maybe be a part of the solution at interior linebacker moving forward. And then Fabian Lovett, a guy that Rob Staten really likes as a match with the Seahawks later in this draft, you know, upside play, long defensive lineman that can move all up and down the line. I like this one a lot. I'm going to give this one an A. I really think Newton would be a home run. I think Bullard, as far as that safety group goes in this draft, would really fit what McDonald's looking for. I think you got great value with the guards, and Norzad can play center as well. And he's bigger than Nick Harris. I think Barner's a guy that has some Will Dissly, kind of John Carlson sort of two-way tight end upside. You have another young developmental linebacker, a couple of defensive ends with upside, and a linebacker, Michael Barrett, who could be a long-term starter for you. I like that one a lot. That's an A. We got a couple more to get to. And running a little long on time. So let's do this one. Because this one's a little bit of a curveball. So we'll take a look at this one. This is from MBOTI13 Booty on Twitter. At 16, Talisi Fuaga out of Oregon State. Big right tackle that some scouts believe can slide inside to guard if he's not ready to play right tackle, or if Abe Lucas is 100% healthy. And you talk about a guy that's a mauler and a punisher in the run game, but also really outstanding in pass pro, and would be even more protected inside. If Lucas is 100% and you take a guy like Fuaga to hold down that right guard spot as a rookie, would most likely beat out Anthony Bradford. That is a massive right side of the line. And as much as the Seahawks have kind of been left side heavy in the run game for a long time, really even dating back to 2005, right? The first Super Bowl year. Imagine that right side if Lucas is right. But if he's not, or if that knee is something that's going to concern the team long term, then a year from now, when it's, you know, when you have to make a decision on a fifth year, not a fifth year option because Lucas is a third round pick. But when you get to the end of his rookie contract, if you don't feel like he's an extension candidate or a guy worth investing in, boom, you kick Fuaga out to right tackle, and then you go look for a guard. Love that idea. I think it's really interesting. I think it's something that Rob has talked about for quite a while, Rob Staten, that Fautanu and Fuaga are two guys that he thinks the teams would have graded very highly and would be candidates on the offensive line to be there at 16, even though Fuaga is listed as a tackle. And then there's Trotter again. And then first mention of Jaden Hicks, who I think is one of the best all-around safeties in this draft out of Washington State. He can cover, he can hit, he's big. I think he's a Mike McDonald safety all day long. I just have trouble drafting him in my mock drafts because he just never falls in the range where I can get him. I think this is one of those cases, though. I don't think he's there at 107. Zach Zinter, again, Eric All, a tight end who I think would be rated much higher than this if he hadn't been coming off a knee injury last year. One of the better all-round tight ends in this draft. And, you know, the track record of Iowa tight ends is pretty good, right? And then Jordan Jefferson, one of those three LSU defensive linemen that are going to get drafted. He's the biggest of the three, a lot of upside there. It's a short draft class, but I really like the Fuaga idea, and I love Hicks. So I'll give this one a B. Here's our buddy Bryce. Just share this one. This is going to have a lot of similarities to what we talked about on the air on Sunday. But this is an idea that was really, really, really popular over the last month, and that is trading down and still taking Graham Barton. And I don't think he's going to be there at 21, but this would be my plan B if I can't get one of the guys that I think is worth sticking at 16 for, which is Verse, Murphy, Fautanu, maybe Fuaga. Or if Dallas Turner falls to 16. Barton's a guy I absolutely love. He's one of my guys. Love him, love him, love him. This would be a home run. And then there you're getting Colson by moving back that far to 29. I think that's Tampa. Is that right? I don't have the draft board in front of me. Christian Mahogany, a guard we haven't talked about yet. Still got some growing to do, but another guy that you see this guy 30 yards down the field chasing guys down on the second, third, fourth level and trying to bury him into the turf. And solid in pass protection as well, really stood out the Shrine game. There's Jaden Hicks again, James Williams, who's been one of Bryce's favorites, Ben Sinnott, tight end out of Kansas State, Jordan Travis again, Brennan Jackson, another Coug that I love and a guy on my guys list. Who's just seems to be getting some buzz out there, moving up boards. Maybe he won't be available in the sixth, but he's kind of right there with Braden McGregor for me as far as just high, high, high motor coming off the edge really, really fast at his size, 265. And we talked about on the show the other day, I feel like there is an opportunity there for Jackson maybe to get to 280 and be able to play inside a little bit. Taj Washington out of USC. Again, get used to the idea that somewhere on the draft board, you're probably going to see a wide receiver taken in this draft. And then Miles Murphy, defensive lineman out of North Carolina, who had a really nice week at the Shrine Game as well. I don't know how realistic Barton at 129 is, but man, you go Barton, Colson, Mahogany, Hicks, just right there. Those first four picks, I got to give this an A. And then I'm going to go down to this one because we don't have a whole lot of time left, but this is one, Mike, AKA Iceman. Always love interacting with him on Twitter. Always has some fun opinions, very, very strong opinions at times, but he did the ultimate. He said he acknowledges right off the top, very unrealistic. It's a 12-man draft, which is very unlikely. Also having a first, 2 seconds, 4 thirds and 3 fifths in the 2025 NFL draft seems crazy. So this plays, but he says just to finish, nonetheless, this is my final mock draft before the draft next week. This plays with that idea. Like if you want to take the concept of next year's draft is better, we'll have a better idea in the second year of this coaching staff's regime of what we need and what fits them and what they want. Let's kick the can down the road a little bit, try and hit on some guys, right? Give McDonald and his staff as many players to play with as possible, basically holding tryout camp all through training camp. And then look what he did, you know, picking up an extra second from Houston in 2025, 2 extra thirds from Arizona and Atlanta, 3 extra thirds and 2 more fifths in next year's draft. Crazy, like you said. And sometimes the drafts that PFN offers you aren't true matches on the trade charts, but let's give this one some consideration, right? We've seen Schneider do things like this in the past. He's had 11 and 12 man draft classes before. He's traded down multiple times. And there's some players here that really fit. And some of them are redundant with what we've seen already. There's Colson at 43. Colson is one of those guys. And I saw someone put this idea out again early this morning. It's an idea that I presented a couple weeks ago as a guy that could sneak into the first round. It was it Tom Pelissero today did a story on NFL.com of 4 guys that could surprisingly sneak into the first round. He had Junior Colson as one of them. It's a scenario I could see if the Seahawks absolutely love him. McDonald thinks he's the guy that he needs to kind of help install that scheme and be a young anchor linebacker type moving forward. He could still, you know, play. There's plenty of snaps to go around for Terrell Dodson, Jerome Baker, and a guy like Junior Colson. That and the Seahawks trade down to the end of the first round, that you could see Colson going in the first round in sort of a Rashad Penny scenario where it's like, we love the player. We know that most teams might have him graded 10 spots lower, but we're not going to get to take him. But we feel like he's that important. So Colson at 43 would be a home run. Ruka Rororo is one of my guys. Not just because I love saying his name, but I think the sky's the limit for this guy's upside. He's a physical freak, and he's kind of young to football still. And the stuff you see on tape is really exciting, and especially knowing that he's sort of a ball of clay that still has a lot of growth ahead of him. That's high for James Williams. Not sure how I feel about that one, but maybe more as a weak side linebacker, it makes sense as opposed to safety. Malik Mustafa, a guy that he's a ball hawk, but he also loves to come up and hit you in the run game. Another guy that's a big favorite of Corbin Smith's at 102. Tavondre Sweat at 118. There you go, your big nose tackle. And any risk that you're taking drafting a guy like Sweat with questions about potential character or behavior at 118 on a guy that's 366 with his kind of explosion, you take a shot. You take a shot there. Then Zinter again, Bo Limmer, who had some of the most explosive testing this offseason of any center in the last 10 years, really, but he can play some guard too. Cam Hart, long corner, 6'3", out of Notre Dame. There's Tip Ryman again. Anthony Gould, smaller wide receiver out of Oregon State. He is a return specialist as well, a guy you can use in the passing game. He'd be looking to beat out D. Eskridge potentially, but also with the new kickoff rules, a guy that I've taken late in many mock drafts. Really, really exciting player. Jalen Harrell, another Michigan guy, so the obvious connection there. Edge player, I like McGregor better. But Harrell might be a little bit more raw and a little bit more to work with there as far as athletic upside. And then at 203, I doubt Hampton's going to be there, but we've talked about him plenty. Yes, it is unrealistic. And for that reason, I can't give it an A, but I like so many of these players that I'll give it an A minus because I like the concept. It's kind of fun. All right. Time for my final mock draft. Let's get it up here and let's go. This is what I came up with. And I took the report today out of the Dallas Morning News as I get what Curtis Allen's saying. And I did have that thought initially as well, that maybe the Seahawks would have a trade in place that they really like in the event that Murphy's there. But I think he's a fit. I think you look at what Mike McDonald did with Justin Madubuike. Similar height, weight, but I just think Murphy is so much stronger as a rookie. His leverage ability, you look at his lower half, how he takes on double teams, go watch the Alabama tape. Doesn't have any tackles or sacks or really anything, but he's impacting every single play in the pocket. He's taking on double teams and holding ground. He's holding up two blockers at a time in the running game, so that other players can make the plays. And he's got some pass rush upside. He's got the long arms, high character, loves football. All those things Mike McDonald has been saying he looks for in players. Byron Murphy has those qualities. And I think he would be a guy high on their board and a guy that they would be comfortable sticking and picking at 16 for. And then I've said this many times, but I like the way the board falls better for their other needs when you address defensive line early. Because then you come back in the third round, and I did some moving down here. So I did, you'll see that I picked up a third, fourth. I did one of those trades where I move up a little bit and then I move back. And so I have eight players in this draft class and I get an extra third. Dominic Pooney, who's really been a late riser for me, guy that played tackle mostly at Kansas, but really athletic, shorter arms, projects as a guard, but has not given up a sack in the last 2 years. His pass protection numbers are off the charts. And keep in mind, he's playing in the Big 12 where they throw it all over the yard in that conference. But he's also a guy that can get to the second level. He can pull and he's got a nasty streak. Really like Dominic Pooney late in this process. Cedric Gray, there he is again. I just think he's a fit. I think there's some Patrick Queen comps there. He's a little bit bigger. I like his coverage ability and there's still some upside there. He's one of the younger, he's 21 and a half. I think he's the second or third youngest linebacker in that class. I think Colson's the youngest, but Gray's not too far behind. There's McCaffrey, told you he was one of my guys. Love, again, inside-outside ability, really smooth and natural. I just think he's a guy that's going to be, you know, whether he's your third option, your second option, sometimes your fourth option. I think he's the kind of guy that's going to make you put him on the field. And he's going to make plays for you. Ketan Oladapo, one of the safeties in this class that I don't think is getting enough attention out of Oregon State. Bigger guy, looks like a box safety, and he will hit you. But he has some coverage ability as well. I could see him playing that slot, that Kyle Hamilton role in Mike McDonald's defense. There's McGregor. I always like to get either him or Brennan Jackson if I can in the sixth round. I just think the value and the upside's there. I think this guy that's going to be, at worst, a key part of your edge rotation as a pass rusher. Tanner McLaughlin, a tight end that's kind of slipped through the cracks, I think, in this class that early on in the process, you know, Jim Nagy was really high on as one of the better, more polished pass catchers and route runners in this class. And he's serviceable as a blocker. I think he would fit. I think he would fit in a Ryan Grubb offense. And then Carson Barnhart, I put him as an offensive lineman. He's listed as a tackle, played mostly tackle at Michigan, but he can play guard. And he is a guy the Seahawks have met with. And I think it makes a lot of sense to double dip at offensive line and get a guy later on that can develop. What do you think of that? What do you think of my final mock draft there? As always, love your feedback. I want to see it in the comments. I want to know what you think. Is your gut feeling now 2 days away from the draft as, it's almost time. It does seem like it has been forever in coming, maybe because I've been so engaged with you and doing this and with coaching change and everything else. There's just been so much going on this offseason that it does seem like it has taken forever to get here, but it is almost here. And just as a reminder, first of all, on our next show tomorrow, the last show that I'll do before the draft begins, Curtis Allen from the Seahawks draft blog, Rob Staton's website, will be joining me. We're going to talk primarily about, he posted a piece today I've been meaning to get together with him for a couple of weeks on some of the financial implications facing the Seahawks. Their cap space now, their cap space in 2025. It may not look great to you if you go check overthecap.com right now. You may be worried about it. So I want to dig into that with him a little bit. He's really, really good about that stuff and is pretty adept at explaining it. So hopefully he'll give us some answers to what we're looking for. Of how they can create some flexibility, how they're going to pay for this draft class, first of all, and then moving into 2025. And then Thursday, I'm going to live stream on the channel all throughout the first round of the draft so we can watch it together wherever you're watching it, off screen, of course, not on screen. I won't make that mistake again. I'll tell that story on Thursday night. And then I'll have draft recaps after the first round Thursday. We'll do a mock draft for the second round and beyond, and then a draft recap Friday and a full recap Saturday night and into Sunday, and then we'll start talking about some undrafted free agents. And then we start getting some guys on here to rate the draft. Some analysts, including one big name that has agreed to come on the show and break down the Seahawks draft that I'm just going to keep in my hip pocket for you until I get that nailed down and scheduled. But stay tuned for that. At Seahawks Forever on Twitter. Forever and always, go Hawks. Thanks for watching. Talk to you again.